Ibra di testa, Tonali, gol! Sandro Meritato! Sandro!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up guys, glad to be back. We got Madison as well.
Yeah, I don't know if I was here last week, was I? Yeah,
I can't remember. That's why I just left.
Let's go.
Yeah, it's been a while since us three have done 2 weeks in a row, but happy days. We've got a couple of results to look back on. We've got a game to preview and a few questions to go through. You know how it goes now with the itinerary. But from now, we are doing something a little bit different with the podcast that we hope that you're all going to get involved with and enjoy. We're going to be recording a smaller 10-15 minute bonus episode that's going to be going out on our Substack. There will be a link to that in the description. And this week we're going to be talking about the stadium situation. I think it's about time we gave some airtime to that, and in particular because I was lucky enough to go to the game against Spurs in the Champions League and got a stadium tour with a few members from Milan, the club, the day before. It was great to have a look behind the scenes at how they've constructed this new £1 billion home right in the heart of North London and the lessons that we can take from it. So, yeah, there'll be a link to that in the description. And, yeah, we hope you go sign up and enjoy it. Just a bit of bonus content for those loyal listeners of ours. So without further ado, we will go into the Champions League recap. So, boys, not a single one of us predicted that we would not lose this game against Spurs last Wednesday night.
I said a draw. I said 1-1.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. That's a draw on the night, but
you're not still wrong.
Yeah, I mean, technically,
I mean, scoreline, I was wrong,
yeah,
but
yeah, but the result was correct, and fair play to you for guessing that. I think I said that we lose 2 or 3-0. I can't remember. I think Maddie said we'd lose 2-1, which would then. False extra
I definitely
time.
Predicted like a 1-0 win.
Yeah, he did. I For think us. you're just wrong here today.
Yeah. Do you need to go get a new fresh cup of coffee that took you 15 minutes to make the first time around?
Yeah, potentially, maybe. I need to look back at that. I'm fairly sure you predicted us to lose and it to go to extra time. But whatever, we're happy. We got through to the quarterfinals for the first time since the 2011-12 season, when we also beat a North London opponent in the round of 16. That was Arsenal, where we won 4-0 first leg and lost 3-0 in the second leg. This one wasn't quite as dramatic as that, because it turned out that Brahim Diaz diving header in the first 10 minutes is enough against a team that has Kane, Son, Kulusevski, Richarlison. And here we are, 1-0 aggregate win. And we're through to the final eight of European football's top club competition once again. As I said, I was lucky enough to be at this game. I was in the press area for it, so it was great to be able to cover it live. And the Milan fans were absolutely fantastic. It was a sold-out away sector, as you can imagine. And there was a lot of Milan fans around in the home area as well. Quite a few of them got ejected, and Spurs fans weren't happy. But the overwhelming emotion that I got from this game is that it was actually pretty crap. That's exactly what we needed it to be.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the best game, and I think that's going to be a trend with everything we talk about today, but ultimately a draw was all we needed, so it was enough. I mean, we didn't do a whole lot. There were chances. Again, it's been the same thing same issue we've had all January. We're just not putting away these chances because we're having them in each game. We're just not doing anything with them, and lucky for us, Spurs weren't doing anything with theirs either. I will say, as soon as we were going to walk out of the tunnel and you see both teams lined up and we're at the Spurs stadium, every Spurs player has their head down. And then there's Mike Mignon in the front screaming, "Let's go, Milan, let's go." And in that moment, I knew, I was like, all right, we're going through. I thought we were going to win, but
the Spurs players just looked defeated as soon as the game started.
Yeah.
They didn't have any like fire underneath them. The game was like a week ago, so to the best of my remembering while watching and working, I feel like we controlled like 90% of the game. They had very few chances on offense. Mike made a save in like the last minute of the game, pretty huge. But other than that, I enjoyed watching it. Normally don't enjoy nil-nil draws, but when you make it to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, you enjoy it.
Yeah, that's all that really matters, ultimately, is we went through. And, you know, we knew going into it a draw would be enough, so we kept it to a draw. And like I said, you know, you want to push more, but it's not like we sat back and defended the whole game. We absolutely started off strong. And I do think we were the better side, definitely in the opening, like, 30 minutes. You know, towards the end of the first half, I felt like Tottenham was coming alive. And they definitely dominated, I'd say, the first half of the second half, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But then once Romero got that red card, I mean, it was basically game over. They took off an attacker for another defender, and they needed two goals to go through. So it was not the best game plan from Conte. And I think the Spurs fans were pretty upset with that as well, because at that point, it's not about holding the draw and saving face. It's about you either go through or you die on your sword. And I think the Spurs fans wanted to see, you know, fuck the defenders, put on another attacker. Let's go for this. Let's try and get something out of this. And, you know, if we concede and lose, it is what it is. At least we tried. And I didn't see that from them. I don't want to say toothless, because that's almost offensive, but once that red card came in, it was like they just said, whatever, it is what it is.
I mean, like, in that situation, though, you want to put more attackers on the field, right? Like, you would think. It's, no matter what, you're already losing, right? So you have to score.
Yeah, there's like, what is the difference between going out 1-0 on aggregate versus 2-0? You know, you might as well say that you went for it. And they had Dan Juma on the bench, who they spent, like, most of January negotiating for, and he's been pretty good. Snake. And they had Lucas Moura, who is obviously he's not what he was, but he's been part of a big run to the Champions League final with Spurs under Pochettino. So it felt surprising to me, but I guess Davinson Sanchez is a big unit, and at that point all they were doing is putting crosses in, so they maybe thought that would help them in that way, and ultimately it didn't. But yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you've both just said. That the game to me seemed to go in these waves of, like, we'd have the ball, we'd push a little bit. Teo or Liao would have a little bit of a run, and then we'd get countered on, and then we'd kind of sit back in our shell for the next 5 or 10 minutes and play quite timid and just try and stop them from building any momentum. And that was absolutely fine, because it meant that they didn't really have a sustained period of pressure. They relied a lot on set pieces, and their deliveries were generally very poor. Like, they had a few in the first half where Son just whacked it over everybody's head and out for a goal kick. And we were lucky in that way. We picked out set pieces for them as a threat ahead of the first leg, and thankfully it didn't prove to be. They nearly equalised with one right at the end, and I want to come on to that. But ultimately, it was a very professional performance. It felt like a very Italian team defending a lead in a second leg type performance to me as well. Mm-hmm. Like, anybody expecting us to come out all guns blazing? I think there was Nesta and Sacchi before the game who were saying Milan need to go out and score the second goal first. You know,
We tried. We definitely pushed forward.
But without risking much, yes. You know, we remained organized while we were doing it. And I think that was important. We weren't going for the usual overlapping fullbacks and stuff. We just built within our means. And when they did have those couple of counters that they botched, like, there was one ball over the top where Tomori just completely outran. I want to say it was Kane. It might have been Kulusevski, but just totally outpaced him down the right flank, passed it back to Maignan, and we started building again. And that's when I think a lot of the Spurs fans started to get frustrated. Like, these long balls over the top to these three quick centre-backs is not going to work if you keep doing it for this long. And it proved to be the case. But
I think everyone kind of underestimates how good Teo is until they're going up against him. Because Kulusevski is a fantastic player. And, I mean, he looked like a schoolyard kid. Like, he just was so out of his element, just in deep water, that he could not get out of. And you know, going to that Kane chance at the very end, he had the header. When Mike made that save, fantastic save, incredible save, definitely kept us from going to extra time. Absolutely. I don't think Tata makes that save. But then it goes to Teo, who sprints, and, you know, Teo did something that was kind of abnormal for him. He got fouled, and instead of going down, he pushed for it. So they, even to the last second, they're like, no, let's try and get this goal. And it really should have been a goal. If just Origi hit the post somehow, like, I don't, maybe Teo should have taken that shot himself. I don't know, but fantastic work rate from him. Mm-hmm. He could have just went down and held the ball for the free kick and waited for the clock to run out. You know, like, it wouldn't have made any difference, but
yeah,
yeah, it was nice to see that. And then as we'll get to, we didn't see it on the weekend.
No. Monday, but. Teo for me was, and I know we'll do tops and flops, but Teo for me was the big standout because he has this thing in big games, and we've seen it in the derby, like when he has his battles with Dumfries that he's more often than not come out on top of. He has this thing where he just knows how to get under opponent's skin. You know, like if it's a couple of fouls early on to wind them up, even though they're cheap, that seems to work. And I mean, that Romero tackle happened pretty much right in front of me, but that was coming for a long, long time. Like mm-hmm. we'd been going at him down the left flank, and Romero is a hothead. Like if you give him a forward to run at, he's going to do it. I don't understand why they aren't playing him in the middle of the back three, because when he sees a winger, it's, you know, rabbit in the headlights, and he just charges them down. And more often than not, he doesn't time his tackles. He didn't do it at Atalanta. He didn't do it at Genoa before that. He had a really bad disciplinary record. And that red card was ultimately what I guess killed the game off.
Mm-hmm. Right before that red card, the commentators said a stat, and I'm going to try and recall it. So my numbers might be a little off here, so don't kill me in the comments. But they were just talking about Romero's disciplinary record. And they said in his last like seven games, he had six yellow cards and a red card, and then seconds later got that additional yellow and then the red card again. So they're like, you can make that 7-2 in his last eight or something crazy. Yeah. It was just like, you can't have a player like that starting in a big game. I understand he's a fantastic defender, but
no, or you have to sub him off.
Yeah, especially after the first yellow card.
And if you're wanting to bring Sanchez on, there's your moment to do it. You do the center back for center back sub.
Well, Andy got a yellow card in the first leg as well, so it's
They had to do it because Dyer was suspended and they're struggling for fitness with certain other players. So maybe they literally had to play him. And he does have big game experience. But
no, he's a fantastic defender.
He just can't learn his lesson, you know?
Exactly. He's honestly kind of like Teo in that sense. The difference is Teo tends to get the better of everyone, and that's why they draw the cards. I mean, Teo's such a dickhead. I love the guy to death. But you see on his Instagram at full time, the first picture he posts is Romero sliding in for the red card. And I'm like, come on, man. Like, only Teo would do that. I love him for it. But, he gets under people's skin. It's fantastic. Definitely man of the match for me.
Yeah, he's a huge
Were we doing tops and flops? Or did I jump
no, I was that's just cool. going to pick him up because he's going to be my top, and I wanted to preface it with that. But just for that specific incident as well where Romero got sent off, it was a ball out to the wing, and he brought it down brilliantly. His control was mid-air. And then he knocked it past him with a very, very clever touch as well. But he was working in a space that was so narrow, and yet he did it, and he drew the foul. And as I said, that was a smart play from him.
I thought he was out of bounds at first, and I was like, damn, there's no need for that from Romero. But
yeah, it really
did it more so knowing that he kept it in play. But yeah, it's still just ridiculous foul to take.
And then I think probably need to address some of the overreaction that came afterwards, which is naturally going to happen. Like, it's an exciting moment for us, you know. It's been over a decade in the making, but I think that that some fans got a little bit giddy and didn't realize that Spurs are really, really shit. Like, they are struggling. Look, they're in a top four race, and that's fine, but it's not a normal season for us in Serie A. It's not a normal season in the Premier League, where you've got Liverpool, who've been god-awful most of the season. Chelsea spent all that money, but it's just not clicking. And like, Spurs have somehow found themselves in this top four race, but ultimately they're going to go trophyless for yet another season. And Conte doesn't like that. And I was sat in his post-match press conference, and he's moody at the best of times, you know, but he looked particularly miserable. And most of the questions he got were about his future and whether he'd quit now instead of in the summer. And you realise how toxic things have got there, you know. Nobody in the little media bit before, like speaking to a few journalists who cover Spurs, nobody was backing them at all. And I thought that's strange, because most of our fans were thinking we'd get turned over based on all the factors that were kind of working against us. And it just goes to show, you know, they outshit us basically. And happy days, we're into the quarterfinals. The draw is on Friday at 12 o'clock Central European time. So that's early morning for you guys.
Yeah, we'll wake up and it'll be done.
Yeah,
I'll be on a flight home.
Yeah,
it's done in Switzerland at the UEFA headquarters, of course. There's the remaining teams will be decided tonight and tomorrow night. Who do you want?
Porto.
I don't know. I don't know if I want a team that has fight. I mean, every team has fight, you know, But like Porto is like a smaller team, and I feel like a smaller team with fight will just demolish us.
Well, they're not even through yet. I mean, they're down 1-0 on aggregate right now to Inter. They play later today. I was just being funny, but
I don't think it's a bad shout though.
Yeah,
For me,
anyone but sorry to cut you off again, but anyone but Bayern and Madrid. Anyone else? I think we actually have a chance against.
Yeah, I would love to see a derby in the quarterfinals.
City might not even get through.
No, I know that's true. I think we'll find a lot out about City tonight in that second leg against Leipzig because the pressure is so much on them. Like this is the one that Pep hasn't won with them, and I think that's worked against them. I mean, he massively overthought that final against Chelsea.
Pep's only won one Champions League, right?
Yeah, he hasn't won any. Yeah, he did. He won one with Barca. Yeah.
They paid the refs, but that team. So, you know.
That's true. They actually are under investigation. Yeah, that's why he's trying so hard.
I agree.
They either lose this 1-0 or win it like 6-1. You know, there's no in between for them in that game. But yeah, honestly, I wouldn't even mind getting an Italian team because it guarantees an Italian team in the semis, which would be good for Serie A. We obviously need it. But I think we could win. And I know we're going to talk about how shit we were against Florentina and how shit we've been all season, but I have this weird feeling we beat Napoli when we play them, you know, in 2 weeks time.
Football,
so we'll see.
Heritage.
It's just the way it goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually think that there's an argument to be made that we might match up better against, because let's face it, there aren't many teams left in this competition, that we can play better than. So what we're relying on is intangibles to try and sort of get through. And I think if we played Bayern and we just tried to completely shithouse it over two legs, we could frustrate them because they rely on the game being played at such a high tempo that if we do like we did against Spurs over both legs, they'd probably become really, really frustrated. However, I also think we could easily lose 5-0 on aggregate because they're a great team. So, yeah,
in
I don't
game,
know.
Right?
Either way.
Might lose.
Either way, it's been a hell of a run, and fair play to this team because going into those last two group stage games, we didn't even know if we were definitely going to make it in. You know, we knew we had to beat Zagreb and Salzburg to make it through, and we did it. And, you know, we got a draw where I think we were probably 60-40 against us in Spurs' favour with them having the second leg at home and stuff, and we've got through that as well. Yeah, I mean, it's 100 million euros. That's how much this run has brought to us. So it's getting to the point now where the cash we've earned from this run is going to offset potentially not qualifying next year. But we still need to qualify next year. And I don't think that the players have really grasped that concept. But we'll come on to that. Top of the match for me was Teo for all the reasons said before.
Yeah, I'm just going to reiterate that.
And shout for Maignan as well for that incredible save. I thought he was really good at commanding his area again, as always. But apart from that and a deflected shot in the first half, he had a pretty quiet night. So well done to the three centre-backs as well. I thought Tomori was outstanding. The defensive unit was very good. Flop of the match is a tough one because there weren't any real standout awful performances, to be totally honest. But I'm going to go with Junior Macias because he had a couple of opportunities to shoot on goal, like really good ones as well, to be honest. That one,
yeah,
that
I'm just
shot.
Laughing because he got hurt and he's out for a month.
Yeah, no, I feel a bit bad for that. But that free kick routine in the first half where it got laid to him on the right side of the box, I mean, hit the target, generate a rebound, anything can happen, or pull your shot enough so it becomes a cross and someone taps it in. He did neither, and then there was that shot that basically went out for a throw-in. It was that bad. But he just stood out as being a little bit off the pace compared to the others, so I'll go with him.
That's a good shout. I'm going to give him a little grace because of the injury. Not that it had anything to do with his performance prior to it, but I'm going to pick someone who is probably an unfair shout because he didn't play a whole lot, but I'm going to pick Origi just because there's no reason to have missed that chance at the end. That's it. Like, obviously, we're through. We didn't need to put it away. That was the last touch on the ball or right before it. But you're 3-on-1 with the goalkeeper. How are you not scoring that, you know? So that's my issue.
Yeah. I really think he should have buried that. There's no two ways about it.
I'm going to go the delivery man because he missed a chance early in the first half that could have put it away.
Yes, sir. That's
the announcer even goes, you need to bury that. So...
Yeah.
Against Foster, man, come on.
Yeah.
In later stages of the competition, which is what we aspire to, those are the kind of things that get punished. And thankfully we're through. As I say, over a decade it's been, and it does feel like a big mental hurdle has been overcome for the team, and we'll see what the draw brings on Friday. So from the celebrations and the glory of London to the 72,000 crowd at San Siro on Monday night, some might say a bit of a drop-off from playing Spurs away to Salernitana at home. Nonetheless, it was important that we got the business done in this game, because Inter had lost to Spezia on Friday night. Lazio had dropped points against Bologna on Saturday. Roma had lost to Sassuolo, conceding 4 goals on the Sunday. And
Atalanta as well.
And Atalanta, yeah, too. So this was a massive chance to claw back level second. A team that's 16th place, Salernitana, as I said in the preview, they're well clear of the bottom three this season, which is a good achievement for them, to be honest. But then they're not really fighting for an awful lot at this stage. But Paulo Sousa teams can be quite tough to play against, as we've found out before. He's beaten us before. And do you know what? The players, if the idea was that the result on Wednesday night would give us a bit of confidence and conviction coming into this game, instead it just seemed to give us fatigue. They just looked not all there to me.
Yeah, I just don't think they really care.
I was going to say that. And do you think it is Pioli? Because it seems like we're ready for the big games and we're not ready for the small games. The small games, like we saw this last season, are the games that win you the title and are games that get you top four.
Mm-hmm.
When you fuck up those games, you fuck up your league position.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is a good job that the other teams that are in the top four fight with us seem to be dog shit as well, because otherwise we could have been cut adrift by now. Seriously, like, there's a good stat here. A guy called Davide Lusinga tweeted it out. So far in 2023, so obviously from January 4th, that first game onwards, Serie A points. Napoli have got 27, Juve 22, Roma 20, Inter 20, Lazio 19. Then you've got three teams on 17 points and us on 15 points. So the gap that we had to those teams has now been totally eroded, and now we're level with them and fighting with them for a top four spot. This should never have happened. Like, we know that the January crisis was what it was, but we were led to believe that we'd turned a corner. You know, Pioli actually publicly said after the Atalanta game that we're cured. He used the word cured, like we're
no longer sick or something.
Yeah, like literally that. And yet it's proven to be a false dawn yet again, unfortunately. Florenzi said something after the game. He said basically that last season some of those chances would go in, and this season that's just the way it is. I think that's one of the worst post-match comments I've ever heard, to be honest. If you're saying, our luck's out, what can we do? Well, you can fucking beat Salernitana. That's what you can do. Like, that is an embarrassing thing to come out and say, to be totally honest. Like, that might have gone in another day. Well, score more goals than one. Like, keep a clean sheet. Do something. Yeah. Like, I know you only came on for the last bit, but do not be saying that it's due to luck, because if anything, we were lucky we got a point.
We were.
Yes. So I agree with what you're saying there, but I also do agree with him that last season, a lot of those would have went in. I mean, how many times did we scrape a win out in the last couple minutes off some weird triple double bounce thing that just landed perfectly? Whereas this time, I mean, we're hitting goalposts in the 93rd minute, or
Kalulu's saving them off the line.
Yeah. Like, I mean, fuck off, man. Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah, there's
at the same time, don't let it come down to that.
I agree. Yeah, exactly. Completely agree.
You know, like,
and what you're saying,
if Tato was in net, we lose this game 4-1.
Probably.
Because there were so many huge saves by Mike. I mean, he ran out of his box and made a slide tackle across the face of this defender. I mean, that's a tackle that Tomori gets a red card for. You know, that's a tackle that Chow wouldn't try to make. That's a tackle that Kier gets sent off for. Like, that was incredible. And so, I mean, not to jump ahead, but Mike's going to be my man of the match, and it's unfair to him that drew, but you look at how shit we were outside of the defense. And I, even though we conceded that goal, I don't think the back three were bad by any means. I'd say the back three and Mike were the best ones.
Sorry for interrupting.
No, you're good.
Their goal
Yeah,
Tomori was like, wait.
All three of them are at fault for that goal. We'll come on to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely agree with that. And it's ironic that I've been begging for Salamakers to play right wing back for the last like 3-4 games, and he finally comes out and does it. And he looks like everything he ever was last season, where I hated him more than life itself. And now I'm just like, what? Why did I want this guy in here? He was awful. And then Krunic, I don't know how he got a high rating other than Isaac has a man crush on him. But
that is literally it. He put in man of the match. I mean, I nearly called him out on that.
Dude, the first goal came from him fucking giving a ball away. Like, he made a pass and it deflected off everyone and was automatically in attack. Like, it's
crazy. I think
crazy.
We all wanted Tonali to get a bit of a rest because he's been playing too much with Bennacer injured, but we at least found out that Bennacer Krunic doesn't really work for us.
Yeah, and I had no idea with the team selection. I thought this was the best team Pioli could have put out. I had absolutely no issue with it. It just didn't work out. Diaz looked like he only cares about the Champions League. Leal looks like he only cares about the Champions League. I mean, he hasn't scored since Salernitana in January, the first game back from the World
Lecce,
Cup.
Lecce, but yeah, it's exactly 2 months.
Okay, yeah, the Lecce game. Yeah. I mean, Teo didn't look terrible, but he's not.
He wasn't the same as Wednesday night. We saw it with our own eyes. You can lead by example, and you fucking hide away. Like, oh man,
he actually came under bad management, though.
Yeah,
Pioli is not managing this team, and not, you know, the team is like, oh, we're gonna beat them. We don't have to try that hard. No, you're not. And
I wonder if there's. Sorry to cut you off again. No, you're fine. Keep doing this. I wonder if there's some sort of instruction from Pioli when Teo and Leao are together in this new formation, because you're not seeing Leao go to the byline anymore. You're seeing him cut inside, and it's never worked once in his career. You're not seeing Teo make these overlapping runs anymore. But as soon as Leao came off, Teo was making those runs, and we created that chance to
nearly.
And you know what? That was a penalty.
That one was the other one.
That was absolutely The first one, I was like, nah, not a penalty. But the second one that got overturned, I'm like, what? Like, how is that? I was blown away.
I was iffy on that one. It looked like Bennacer went down pretty easy, and I couldn't tell if the defender touched him or not.
To me, it looks like he gets his leg.
There's one angle where there's contact, if not from his leg, from his arm. You know, he can still be pushed over in that situation. Right. But the point is, and I didn't realize this, like at the time I said, I think that's the right call to overturn it. But they broke the protocol of VAR. Like, the whole point of VAR is to eradicate clear and obvious errors from the game. And one of the subsections of that is to do with contact versus no contact. If a referee's a judge there to be sufficient contact, the only way it can be overturned is if there's no contact at all. If there's one angle that shows there is, unfortunately, that's it. It's a penalty. It has to stay that way. And even the commentators on BT were saying it's probably not, but it's going to stay as one. And they were shocked when it got overturned. But the VAR chief was Banti, who we have a bit of history with. Fucking everyone we seem to have history with, you know. The referee was the guy who sent off Salamakers when we drew 2-2 away at Napoli. Again, every referee we seem to have history with.
Well, we haven't had a penalty since September either, which is insane. You know,
and we had how many?
We used to be.
How many have we had overturned though? Like, it's not like we've had a lot go to VAR.
No, it doesn't feel like we've had many.
We've had two, and one was that handball that we never should have got called for us. You know,
right?
And then I think we're all good at that.
Like,
this one
could have gone either way.
Yeah,
like we haven't had a lot of like penalty shouts. So
yeah, I agree. And Giroud, I mean, obviously he scored the goal, but he didn't do anything either.
No, I mean, look, he couldn't miss the header. It was a perfect delivery, but it's funny. We were all kind of mentioning in the chat how strange you take Tonali off set pieces and we start putting decent balls in. Look, it wasn't always like that. We had a couple of bad ones as well, but an in-swinging corner, what a revelation this is. And it results in a goal because all Giroud needs to do is go like that and just nod it. And
he didn't even jump. It was pinpoint.
Yeah, just hit him. And he could have been penalized for a foul, to be honest. But he was sort of racking his
arm. And with an outswinger, even if it's pinpoint perfect, the trajectory of the ball is not going towards goal. So you have to redirect it with an outswinger. It's
never understand.
It's not revolutionary to understand that inswingers are better.
But we've scored 2 goals from corners this season now, which means we've surpassed the entire total of last season.
Which is ridiculous.
Says more about us than anything impressive. So yeah, aside from that, I think Giroud was—he just looks tired, man. He put in such a shift on Wednesday. I won't say that he was brilliant on Wednesday because he couldn't hold up an umbrella in that game.
Like, well, he got his suspension.
The ball hit him. Yeah, there was that as well. I think that looked almost deliberate. He kept tripping players from behind, and it's like you're gonna get one eventually.
I mean, he hugged him from behind and just held him. Like,
it did feel like deliberate, to be honest.
I mean, obviously we've got Napoli. Rest. I think we all know that, and he wants to be good for Napoli, so it makes more sense to get it against Udinese, even though that's a bogey team for us. But
I still find it cheap when strikers are getting yellow cards anyway. You know, you shouldn't be getting them, to be totally honest. But he did well against Spurs pressing from the front. He put in a really, really solid shift, but then you could see that he was struggling from that. The guy's 36. He turns 37 this year. He's had, this was prior to last night. He's had something like 1,600 minutes played.
Yeah, our most played
1,522, so now it'll be 1,600-ish, and that is more
that's
than
crazy.
It's almost treble Origi, and then the rest of our forwards have got less. So
Zlatan's got 40 minutes or whatever it is.
It's well, gone beyond working overtime now. It's like a labor camp.
Yeah, it's not fair to him. I get it, but also at the same time, right after they score the goal, 61st minute, Pioli triple subs all three of the attackers, and all three of them were bad. But he takes off Giroud, our top goal scorer, or our top striker, Liao, our overall top goal scorer, and Brahim Diaz, the only attacking mid that's done anything all season, to bring on Origi, CDK, and Zlatan, who combined for 2 goals and 1 assist, the three of them.
And yeah.
Is that all Origi?
CDK has 1 assist. And,
does he?
And Origi has 2. Yeah. You know what?
He does it against Bologna
as well. So I don't know. Maybe it's a little
bit. Origi has an assist. He got one in that Monza game that he scored in.
Okay.
Both of Origi's goals were 4-1 and 5-1. The scores were.
They just don't look bothered. And then Origi is just fucking off.
That was the most mad I've ever been.
He has
a player
no
in my
spot.
Life. He's so bad.
I don't know where his head's at.
Anytime the ball went anywhere near Origi, not only did he not touch the ball, but somehow it ended up with the Salernitana player. And it wasn't like these were bad passes. I mean, some of them were. But it was just, it comes to him and it'll either, he'll miss it when he goes to settle it, take his touch, or he takes a heavy touch and it bounces straight to someone. I don't think I ever saw him make a run. The one time it went over the top and he sticks his foot out, it's like, cool, it's going to land perfectly. You're on a breakthrough, you're on a run. He takes such a heavy touch, it rainbows back behind him to the Sornitana player for a counter. And I'm like,
that was
what
funny.
The fuck is this guy doing?
Well,
like,
you even saw it when Teo was running up, or he was trying to make a run, and Teo stopped the attack because he didn't want to pass the ball to Origi. Like,
4 million
it's like playing with one
season.
Less man.
Yeah, it's not
wild.
Good. And what about that cross from the far side as well that, just evaded Ibra and he just chested it into Ochoa's hands. It's like, what?
Ibra was so pissed.
Oh my God, and rightly so. I'll tell you one thing that really annoyed me about the last 25 minutes. So Pioli has this thing where he does triple subs. He loves doing his triple subs. Those have got to be right. Like every single, it's three subs, you know? Each individual one has got to be right for us. Otherwise, it's going to completely disrupt any flow that we have in the game. And it's going to basically set us back to start, back to square one. We made that triple change, and it was very obvious to me inside the final 20 minutes that we were not even trying to break them down with proper football anymore. We just banged two players up front and just loaded crosses into the box. Sachi's got a famous quote on that where he says, "If that was the best way to score, then we'd play that way for 90 minutes." And some teams too, but it just shows utter desperation. And what that allowed Salernitana to do was say, okay, we've got a point here, because they just committed everybody into the box and said, you're not going to get anything. And we didn't. We had that one chance, you know, where Kalulu somehow cleared it off the line for them. Yeah. But if it had gone in, it would have been handball anyway.
It was so bad and glaringly obvious that our plan became long balls over the top.
Route one, yeah.
That Salernitana just had all their people in the box, didn't even bother to come forward and try to defend. Anytime we got the ball, we passed it back to Mike Maignan, who's on the midway point, and he's kicking it over the top. Like, that was our last four plays of the game was Mike from midfield over the top to no one. In what world does a team allow the opposing goalkeeper to do that from midfield? Like, that's how confident they were that nothing was coming from this. They're just like, ah, whatever. We're good.
It's like, oh, you've stopped trying to play football.
Yeah.
You've stopped trying to break us. We never did it because it wasn't working during the game. But if we had any hope of stringing together quick passes with some precision that actually turned the defenders around and got us into dangerous positions, yeah, that was out the window. You know, that was the tactics of a provincial side. And don't get me wrong, we've seen it with Guardiola teams where they start loading balls into the box. However, the desperation of something like that, it just shows that with this change in system, and it's not just due to the formation, it's obviously personnel related as well. But I just think that we had to make the shift to make us more compact, and we had to stop the bleeding defensively. We really did. And we knew that we'd suffer a little bit in the attacking phase, but we were finding a way to win games 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 2-0 against Atalanta. It's like, right, the players are starting to click again in the attacking phase. And then we seem to go, I don't know, into a shell. Like, the players just do not look confident. And we're back to relying on individual brilliance and right place, right time stuff rather than... Like, we've seen the potential of this team. This is what frustrates me so much. In that post-lockdown run, we played the best football in the league by a country mile. We were fantastic. Like, we were scoring multiple goals. We were pressing. We were moving the ball vertically quickly. In the Scudetto season, we didn't do it quite as well, but I think it was at the trade-off of being a bit more balanced, and ultimately our defensive record is what won us the league, like keeping 9 clean sheets in 11. But then this season has just been so, so bad. Like, nothing seems to have clicked in the attacking third, and some of that has to fall on Pioli. Like, we've seen Sarri team dismantle Salernitana this season. Most teams have dismantled them, at least serious teams, and they've shown the blueprint, and yet we thought that the way to do it was just slow, laborious, lackluster build up, and it has cost us. It has cost us two massive points, and now we've got a tough game coming up. But what hurts more as well is that there's the Rome derby on Sunday, and then there's Inter Juve as well. So it was a big chance to then build even, gain even more ground on those teams, and we pissed it up the wall. And on their goal as well. Boulay Dia has got 8 goals this season and 4 assists. Like, he'd be our top scorer. He's actually a pretty good player. You probably shouldn't leave him on his own at the near post for a low
he's
cross.
He's quick too. I didn't realize how fast he was.
He's good. He's a good player, you know. He's a year younger than Origi, and he actually scores goals. So I think, you know, we probably made a little mistake there. The thing that's happened before this season is Tomori seems to have this freedom, and it must be an instruction from Pioli. It simply has to be, because as a centre-back, you don't break your line without it. But he seems to have this thing where he can detach and roam up the field, sometimes into midfield, sometimes further than that. Like, he was through one-on-one against Monza away when Teo found him in behind, and that was just purely from a run from the back. And he got caught behind the player yesterday as well. And then that left Pierre Kalulu having to go out to pressure Kandreva, who was about to pull across a low ball. And then that left Chiao between Dia and Piontek. And Chiao makes the wrong choice, unfortunately. I'm not going to say as a centre-back or whatever, because obviously he's far better than the majority of centre-backs that we've seen come through our doors in recent years. But you can see a threat in front of you versus you don't know what's behind you. You have got to get to that threat that's at the near post, because otherwise it's a tap-in, and that's unfortunately what happened. And it wasn't Chiao's best game, because he had that mix-up with Kalulu as well that nearly cost a goal, but for Maignan's goal-line clearance. That's it. Rant over. Man of the match, Mike.
Yep, Maignan. Yep.
And flop of the match, Liao.
I'm going Origi again. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Liao and... I forgot his fucking name. What the hell? Brahim. Why did I forget Brahim Diaz's name? I want to call him Davies for some, I don't know.
Brahim Davies.
I started doing it in our group chat. I started doing a count of the amount of times that Brahim had fallen on the floor and been posh. And I lost count. I genuinely lost count. Like, I couldn't be bothered doing it anymore.
Steph and I go back and forth. If CDK and Brahim were like mixed into one player, they'd be very good. Because they'd have CDK's strength and height, and Diaz's dribbling. My main problem with Diaz is he's just weak and he falls over. So
he is.
But he also scores. So
yeah, that's the annoying part. Well, anyway, we chalk it off. We move on to Udinese on Saturday night. So Udinese this season are currently 10th. It's usually where they are around this time every single season. They are, by definition, a mid-table club now, aren't they? But we always seem to find it kind of difficult to play against them. Like, we've required a Zlatan late overhead kick that one year. Twice. And yeah, and more heroics he scored in his last two games against them, actually. But this year, Udinese, 8 wins, 11 draws, 7 defeats. 34 goals scored, 30 goals against. They were absolutely flying at the start of the season. After 8 games, they were up in third. They won 6 out of their first 8 games, which is fantastic. But the one that they lost, of course, was against us, 4-2, opening day of the season. Rebic scored a brace in that game as the centre-forward because Giroud wasn't available. Should we do the same again, or should we just give Zlatan that first start that he seems to need?
Give it to Zlatan and then sub on Rebic later if needed.
Yeah. Don't let Origi anywhere near the field.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
That's
I feel like we're all agreed on that. Yeah. They've only won 1 in their last 7 games of Udinese, and
they're about to win 2 out of their last 8.
Yeah, so. I know. They actually went on from start of October to middle of January, and they went on a 10 game run without a victory. That's where they fell from third to mid-table where they are now. That being said, they've still got a fair bit of threat. They've got Beto, the striker. Udoji's there on loan from Spurs. Lazar Samardzic, who we've been linked with in the press in the last week, central midfielder, who seems to be a good player. They've got Pereira, who's on 3 goals, 6 assists. De La Feu, of course, who's on 2 goals, 6 assists. Becau, who's that centre-back who always seems to score against us. How are we feeling about this? I think this is going to be a real ball ache of a game.
Yeah, every time we play, I just think, why did we not get De La Feu back? He's better than everything we have
so
on the right.
So good on the right.
I know.
I think we might see the return of the 4-2-3-1. I think we might see Kalulu at right back with Chow and Tomori in the center with Benacer and Tonali. Double pivot. I think that's time for that to return. And then we're probably going to see Liao, CDK, and Salamakers as the right wing. And I think Ibra up top because we're just not producing enough offensively with the 3-4-2-1. And I really like that formation. I really do. It's just, we're not getting anything in attack, and now that we have our top scorer suspended, we got to do something. We got to find a way to get Liao back involved. I mean, he can't be going this long without a goal, so we got to do whatever we can to support him there, and if it means changing the formation, so be it. But I'm not confident.
No, yeah, I gather nobody is. Yeah. I don't think it's not a seismic shift to go back to a four-man defence either, because mm-hmm. when we're in games, you see Teo left, Tomori and Chiao centred, and Kalulu building round to the right. And actually, Kalulu's crosses are pretty damn good. Yeah, they are good. And also, I do think it has brought the best out of our midfield double pivot as well, because they've got 3 options ahead of them, whereas at the moment, I think they're a little bit confused. That being said, it broke down really badly during January. You know, we all agreed that the system wasn't working anymore. So he needs to do some serious work on it. And I think if we are going to see a change in system again, it might be after the international break that's coming up, because we play Udinese and then we've got a break. we got a 2 week break for international friendlies. So that might be the time to.
When
work
is the
on,
break?
After the Udinese again, we got 2 weeks off.
Oh.
Yeah, sweet. There's some pointless games going on. Friendly, I want to say friendlies and.
And then, of course, we come back to Napoli after the break. I hope nobody gets called up. I hope we've been in bad enough form that everyone stays back and just fucking trains.
Yeah, yeah. Udinese, for what it's worth, play a 3-5-2, and it feels like they have done for years, to be honest. Even when they had, like, Rodrigo De Paul and stuff. I'm going to go 1-1. I don't see us winning this. I really don't. I see it being a tight game where they frustrate us. We really struggle to break them down. But I'm being kind of optimistic with a 1-1 draw.
I feel like Udinese the past like 5 years have had our number. But I'm going to be different than the two of you. I'm not going to lie, I wasn't paying attention to what AJ said.
I haven't
said anything.
Oh, perfect. That's why I was paying attention. I think we're going to get a win here. They're going to win one out of their last eight, and it's going to be 2-0.
Well, then, just to counteract what you just said there, I'm going to
agree with
you.
I'm glad you were paying attention.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with you on the win, but I don't think it's going to be a fun or easy one. I think we're going to concede early and fast, and then we're just going to be pushing nonstop to get it back, and we're going to probably equalize late in the second half, feel like we could push for a winner, and get that winner super late in stoppage time.
Well, I hope that's right, but it's not going to do any good for our blood pressure.
Nope, never does.
Yeah, fingers crossed you're right. Let's do a couple of questions then, and then we can wrap up this. So I have a feeling I know what a few of these are going to be about. I've not got the tweet up, which is an amateur mistake for me. There we go. Right, so Keviano asks, how far do you think we can go in the Champions League? A win in Istanbul will finally completely bury that horrible nightmare.
Well, don't get your hopes up on that. We're not winning the Champions League. But I do think a semifinal appearance is not that crazy. Especially if, like, say, Madrid and Bayern get matched up right now. Like, that would be massive. You know, it's one of the top dogs off. I think we could beat everyone except for Madrid, Bayern, and City if they go through. I think those are the only three teams that we're really going to just not stand a chance. I think we could beat all the Italian teams. I think we could beat all the others. I don't remember who's left. I think we could beat Chelsea. I think we really want to get that one back on them too, so we'd really push for it. I think we could pull it off against anyone else in the quarterfinals.
Benfica would be a really nice matchup. I kind of like that. It's two young teams who have got what you would consider to be good projects, and like you'd probably say based on history and stuff that we'd be slight favourites for that one, but Benfica have kind of dismantled a few teams this season.
Yeah.
And Porto would also be a chance for a bit of revenge after that group stage farce against them. But yeah, I agree. The elite sides are the elite sides, aren't they? I think Real Madrid, Bayern, most likely Man City would brush past us.
I don't think we'll make it to the final, but I will bet we can make it to the semis.
That'd be massive. The money that would bring.
But also, like, then Pioli might stay.
I think he's going to stay regardless. Unless we don't get Champions League, that's the only way he doesn't stay.
Yeah. It's tough, isn't it? Because this European run, I'll call it a run, even though we've only won one knockout round, is kind of, it might be in some ways papering over the cracks, because domestically, we have been so Jekyll and Hyde. Like, we had the dominant win against Atalanta that was followed by a bad performance against Fiorentina. We had the Spurs' second leg where we looked so organised. And then last night, we had the home win against Bologna when there was the CDK assist. And then we went to Sassuolo and drew, and Berardi missed a penalty. And we just looked god-awful. Like, we have so many of these inconsistent performances, and yet the money and the run in Europe is making it look like more and more of a successful season than what it's actually been. We're 20 points behind Napoli, 20 points. And it was 5 at one point earlier this year. You know, that's not good. A defending champion can't lose by 30 points. That's where we're heading towards. You know, we're going to be 30 points off the pace. Napoli are having a freakish season, don't get me wrong. We can all tip our caps and say they deserve it. They're going to win the league by a landslide. However, we have fallen off so badly. So badly. Gregory Peck, this is an interesting one and one that I have never, ever thought of before. But he says, do you see European football moving away from a transfer fee-based model and moving into an NFL-style draft model to make it more balanced for clubs? Maybe throw in the free agency thing as well that comes with American sports, because we're already seeing more of a shift towards that, like players going to the highest bidder kind of shit. I think transfer fees are too important for the economy of football, to be honest.
See, I think it's getting close to a market collapse with just the inflation of it all, and how right now there's only one league that could really afford it, and then like three or four teams outside of the Premier League that could afford these ridiculous prices. That I think eventually we are going to see some sort of crash, and I don't know if the American model is going to come in. I highly doubt that, although we are seeing a lot more American owners getting involved in the sport, so you will see changes at some point. I mean, you see Bully talking about like a Premier League All-Star game, which personally I think would be a lot of fun to watch, you know. But I don't know. I think there will be changes at some point. I just don't know what it is. I think the first thing we're going to see is a Super League before we see an overhaul of the transfer system. But eventually UEFA is going to crash. The transfer system
is never going to go away.
No, it's too much money. And also, if you take that away, then I think that some of the sort of state-funded clubs and the clubs that are funded by mega-rich consortiums and what have you will see their ass, because all of a sudden they can't outspend the rival teams. And that's the only reason they invest in the first place, is because they've got a quick route to success and to money wash and what have you. They are bringing in a cap on agent commissions, which I think is the first logical step. Like, I mean, that should have been done a long, long time ago, because that was sort of seen as sway towards the free agent stuff, and we know how that's affected us as a club, for example. I agree with you, though. I think the way transfer fees are going now, it's reaching a point where something will happen. It will either collapse and everything will go back to actual relative value, because clubs will realise that it's not sustainable, or it'll just keep going. And I don't know how football adjusts to that. I guess the disparity just grows and grows to the extent that all of a sudden nobody will care about anything other than the top few clubs in each division. Maybe they already do, I don't know. But I don't know what happens if it keeps going and going. Feels like there has to be a big bang at some point. We got a few questions about formation, and we kind of mentioned there about the three-man defence and potentially switching back out of it. What do you guys think about a 4-3-3?
I don't think it's enough. I mean, what?
Because we get rid of having to play with the 10, which I think is hurting us at the moment. I mean, we basically play 3-4-1-2 at the moment with Liao and Giroud, and then Brahim in the central areas in behind. Liao, to get the best out of him, has to play out wide. He has to be found in space in isolation to run at defenders. So either drive to the byline or cut in. We'd rather he go to the byline. Also, having your two players on the outside allows for more overlaps. I think we were better at positional interchange there, but we just needed a bit more shielding in front of the back four, because the 4-2-3-1 was getting cut apart. A few people mentioned the 4-3-3, so I just thought I'd throw that out there.
I just don't know. I mean, what is our midfield looking like then? Kurnish, Ronaldo, Benacer? Like, I'd rather not use all three of our only midfielders at once.
Bakayoko's...
I'd rather never see him. So... until we get at least an additional midfielder of any value, I would avoid a three-man midfield.
Yeah. Also, like, there's a fair few people who are just like, don't give a shit. It doesn't matter what we play with these personnel. Like, while ever we have very unreliable depth options, it doesn't really matter what our system is, because when we eventually have to rotate, any system's going to look bad with these bad players in it. And I think they've got a point. I think we're heading to a summer where we need major overhaul, but whether it will come is another thing. That's everything. Thank you very much if you made it this far. Appreciate we didn't have a win to recap, but I suppose, you know, Champions League quarterfinals and all that, that's all we're hanging our hopes on at the moment. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe on YouTube. Give us a rating on your favourite podcast platform. And as mentioned at the start of the episode, go and subscribe to us on Substack for this week's bonus episode, which will be all about the stadium situation. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. AJ, thanks for joining.
Yep. I'll be here next week as well.
And Maddie.
I hope to be here next week.
We'll very see. Morbid.
On the podcast.
Yeah. Thank you very much for watching, everyone. We'll catch you in a week's time.
Ecco l'Anteante in area di rigore, Anteante, Ibra, gol! Vediamo se è buono, ce l'ho da buono.